All right, so let's jump into the Supreme Court case. It's Bailey v. Drexel Furniture Co. It's from 1922, and it still comes up even today. We're going to be talking about child labor, taxes, and really a battle between federal power and states' rights.
You know, it's really fascinating how this case shows how the court can like look beyond what a law says and figure out what it's really trying to do. And they weren't scared to kind of challenge Congress, even way back then.
Yeah, I mean, we've got legal briefs here. We've got excerpts from the actual ruling and some historical context too. And I think our mission here is to really understand, can Congress actually use its power to tax, to regulate something that's traditionally been under the control of the states?
Right. And that's a question that we still see pop up today,
Yeah.
right? We can think about debates around the Affordable Care Act and the individual mandate, which, as you know, was first presented as a tax.
Exactly. So to really get into this, we need to go back in time, back to 1919. World War I had just ended, and there were a lot of concerns about child labor. That's when Congress passed the child labor tax law.
Yeah.
So, can you break this down for us a little bit? What did this law actually do?
Well, this law basically said that any company that employed children in certain ways would have to pay a 10% tax on their profits. So, you know, we're talking about like kids younger than 14 working in factories or teenagers working super long hours. Congress was really trying to hit these companies where it hurt.
Yeah, right in the wallet.
Yeah.
But why use taxes for this? Couldn't they have just passed a law that said no to child labor?
Yeah, that's a good question. And actually, just a year before, the court had struck down a federal law that was trying to regulate child labor, but they were trying to use interstate commerce to do that. That was the Hammer v. Degenhart case. We can get into that a little bit later, but basically, because of that case, Congress decided to try something else. They tried using their taxing power instead.
Ah, so it's a little bit of legal maneuvering there. And that's where Drexel Furniture comes in, right?
Exactly. Drexel Furniture was a company in North Carolina, and they ended up getting hit with a pretty big tax bill. It was over $6,000. And, you know, back then, that was a lot of money, all because they employed a young boy.
Yeah, I can imagine they weren't too happy about that. So what was their argument against this tax?
Well, they basically said that this law was unconstitutional. They said that Congress was being sneaky, that they were hiding a penalty behind this tax label. It wasn't really about getting money, it was about making companies follow federal rules about child labor.
So it was more about control than revenue, according to Drexel.
Yeah, that's right. They were pointing to the 10th Amendment, which, you know, says that if the Constitution doesn't specifically give a power to the federal government, then that power belongs to the states. And at that time, labor laws were considered a state issue.
Right.
So it's like, imagine if all of a sudden the federal government decided to tell your city how they should deal with parking tickets. That's the kind of thing the 10th Amendment's supposed to prevent.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I like that. So we've got Drexel Furniture, this seemingly regular company, going up against the federal government. It's a total David and Goliath situation.
Yeah.
How did the government respond to this? What did they say?
Well, the government basically said, look, the Constitution gives us the power to tax, and we can tax pretty much anything we want. It's up to us how we use the money we raise.
Yeah.
So it was really a classic power struggle.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
So how did the Supreme Court handle this? This was a big constitutional issue.
So in the end, the Supreme Court actually sided with Drexel Furniture. It was a big decision, 8-1.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, and Chief Justice Taft basically said, hey, Congress, nice try, but we see what you're doing. You can't just call something a tax when it's really a penalty. You're trying to trick us with this fancy legal wording.
Yeah, so the court saw right through their strategy. What were some of those clues that gave it away?
Well, for one thing, that 10% tax, that was a fixed amount. It didn't matter if a company had just one kid working for them or a whole bunch. The tax was always the same, which is kind of weird, right?
Yeah, if it was a real tax, you'd think it would change based on like how many kids were working or how bad the conditions were.
Exactly. A real tax usually scales with whatever's being taxed. This felt more like they were just trying to punish companies for breaking the rules.
Right, like a fine, not a tax.
Yeah.
So the court was basically saying, this isn't about raising money, it's about controlling what companies do.
You got it. And then there was that thing about if an employer accidentally hired some underage workers, they didn't have to pay the tax. If the government really cared about collecting taxes, they wouldn't care if it was an honest mistake.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's like they were saying, we only want to punish you if you're doing this on purpose. So it does sound like they were trying to regulate child labor, not just collect taxes.
Right. And there's more. The law also gave the Labor Department power to go and inspect factories. The court saw that as another sign that this was about control, not money. They were giving the federal government a way to enforce their own ideas about child labor.
Yeah, it seems like they were really protecting the state's role in regulating stuff like this.
Oh, absolutely. And Taft actually said something really interesting about that. He said, and I'm paraphrasing here, that if we just let Congress call any regulation a tax, it would totally mess up the balance of power and take away the state's power.
Wow. Yeah, that's a pretty strong statement. It sounds like they were worried about setting a dangerous precedent here. But you mentioned earlier that the court had already struck down a federal child labor law in that Hammer v. Degenhardt case. How does this ruling in Bailey connect to that?
Well, in Hammer, Congress had tried to regulate child labor directly. They said that products made by companies with child workers couldn't be shipped across state lines. They were trying to cut off the market for those goods.
Ah, so they went after the transportation of the products instead of the actual production itself.
Right. But the court in Hammer said, nope, you can't do that. That's going too far with the Commerce Clause. They said that regulating how goods are made, that's a state issue, not a federal one.
Interesting. So even back then, the court was drawing a line, saying the federal government couldn't use the Commerce Clause to regulate things that were traditionally handled by the states.
Yeah, and Bailey basically takes that same idea and applies it to taxes. The court's saying you can't do with taxes what you couldn't do with direct regulation. Like, they were trying to find a loophole in the Constitution, and the court was like, nope, not going to work.
Right, right. I see. So in both of these cases, the court was really focused on protecting the balance of power between the federal government and the states.
Absolutely. They had a pretty narrow view of federal power at that time. They didn't want the federal government stepping on the state's toes.
Yeah. But we know that things changed quite a bit later on, right? What happened to change that view?
Well, the Great Depression happened, and then came the New Deal era. And that led to a huge shift in how the court saw federal power. They started giving Congress a lot more freedom, especially when it came to regulating things that crossed state lines.
It's almost like they realized that the world had changed and the federal government needed more power to deal with these big national problems.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. The court started to see that the economy was way more connected than it used to be, and sometimes you need solutions at the national level to fix national problems.
That makes sense. So did the Bailey v. Drexel decision just kind of disappear after the New Deal? Did it become irrelevant?
It didn't completely disappear. I mean, its main point about using taxes for regulation, that definitely got weakened. But Bailey, it's still kind of a warning sign. It reminds Congress that they can't just, like, do anything they want and call it a tax. There are still some boundaries.
Right. The court was basically saying you can't just slap a tax label on something and think you're getting away with it.
Exactly. And the cool thing is, the court in Bailey, they actually gave us some guidelines for figuring out if something is a real tax or if it's a penalty in disguise. It's like a little cheat sheet for understanding Congress's taxing power.
Ooh, I like cheat sheets.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things we should look for? What are those guidelines?
Well, the first thing they looked at was whether the tax was actually related to the violation. Like, was it proportional? Remember that 10% tax in Bailey? That was a big red flag for them. It didn't change based on how bad the violation was. It was always the same amount.
Yeah, it was more like a fixed fine for breaking the rules instead of a tax that goes up or down.
Right. And they also looked for other things that made it seem like a punishment, like exemptions for people who didn't mean to break the rules. Remember, we talked about that. And they also considered stuff like the Labor Department getting involved with inspections. Those things made it seem like it was more about regulation than raising money.
So basically, the court was looking for any signs that Congress was trying to sneak in some extra regulations by calling them taxes.
Exactly. And one more thing, they were really concerned about protecting the state's power. They didn't want to give Congress a way to just ignore the 10th Amendment by calling any regulation a tax.
Right, right. So even though Bailey might not be the most important case on this issue anymore, it still has some influence. It makes Congress think twice before using taxes in a tricky way.
Absolutely. It reminds us that even something like Congress's power to tax, it's not unlimited. The Constitution still puts some limits on it.
This brings up a really interesting question. Could Congress pass a law about child labor today, but use their understanding of the Commerce Clause the way we understand it now? Could they finally do what they couldn't do back in 1919?
That's a question that would cause some serious debate in the legal world. It all comes back to that balance between federal power and states' rights. We're still figuring that out, even today.
Yeah, we are. And you know what? This whole case, even though it's over 100 years old, it's still relevant. There's so much to think about, from child labor and states' rights to taxes and the role of the court. But before we wrap up, I'd love to hear what you think about Justice Clark's dissent. He seemed to think that the court was being a little too nosy, you know, questioning Congress's motives when it came to taxes.
Oh, that's a great point.
Yeah.
You know, Clark's dissent is super important because it raises this big question about the court overstepping its boundaries. It's about judicial overreach.
Yeah, let's talk about that a bit more. What was he getting at?
So Clark basically believed that unless Congress was very clearly breaking the Constitution, the court should just let them do their thing, especially when it came to taxes. He thought it wasn't the court's job to try and figure out what Congress was really thinking when they made a law.
So he was basically saying, if Congress says it's a tax, we should just take their word for it.
Yeah, pretty much. He was worried that if the court started second-guessing Congress all the time, it would mess things up and make it harder for them to actually do their job of making laws.
I see. It kind of flips the whole idea of separation of powers, right?
Exactly. It makes you wonder, who really gets to decide how Congress can use its powers? Is it the court, or is it Congress themselves?
It's a really big question. Mm. And it seems like Clark was worried about keeping things balanced, not just between the federal government and the states, but also between the different parts of the federal government itself.
You got it. Clark's dissent reminds us that our whole system of checks and balances, it's complicated, and people have different ideas about how it should work.
We've definitely covered a lot today, from child labor and states' rights to the ins and outs of taxes and judicial review. But before we go, any last words of wisdom for our legal listeners out there?
You know, I think the big takeaway from Bailey v. Drexel is that it's a case that still matters today, even though it happened so long ago. It raises questions about power, about the court's role, and about the creative ways Congress tries to use its powers. And those are questions we're still grappling with.
It's also a good reminder that the law isn't always black and white. How we understand the Constitution changes over time, and cases that were once super important can become just part of the story as our view of the law evolves.
But even those older cases, they can still teach us a lot. Bailey v. Drexel, it might not be the top case on Congress's taxing power anymore, but it still reminds us that the government can sometimes overstep its boundaries and that we need the court to keep an eye on things.
Well said. I think we've given our listeners a lot to chew on today. Who knew that a case about a furniture company and a child labor tax could be so interesting?
It is pretty amazing. The law is full of surprises.
That's why we love doing these deep dives. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.
Always a pleasure.